Yes. I'll watch my mouth.
Okay. Dan does an intro.
I'm just tone deaf and like rambling over somebody else's.
Like, very nice.
Yeah.
So, Brad, the last time we talked was a couple of years ago when you came to the Berkman Center and you you sang some songs and you were kind enough to subject yourself to about an hour of conversation about the state of the internet from the point of view of an independent musician. Mm-hmm. So what's the state of the internet from the point of view of an independent? How's it going these days?
It's going good. It's there's a lot more. I mean, that was three years ago, I guess. So there's more money in it, basically. Just more and more people have gravitated towards it. CDs are getting to be an afterthought. As I mean, I already thought that it was going that way 3 years ago, but now it's getting kind of ridiculous. People don't actually, you know, you try and hand somebody a CD and they're like, ugh, what am I gonna, it's just gonna, I have to dust this. And so there's that, and there's a lot more digital distribution stuff. People are seem to be getting more and more used to buying things on their phones and buying things at their computers and stuff. And so that's going really well. There's also just a ton more bands. Like, just, you know, I miss 2000, 2001 when there was absolutely no competition. That was awesome.
Does the looming death of the CD as a distribution medium, has that helped you economically, or has it hurt you, or neither?
I'd say it. I mean, I haven't really thought about it in those terms, but I'd say it's helped just that people are gravitating towards digital distribution because you don't need. I mean, that's like $35 to set up, and that's about it. And then you're selling, whereas CD you actually have to manufacture and put a bit of money up front and then physically ship them to people, which was the whole at least one of the large justifications behind record labels in the first place, was you needed all this capital to move all these, you know, all this vinyl, all this plastic around to the people who wanted to listen to it. So it's certainly been helpful in that way. It's weird in another way that I don't quite know what physically to sell people. And I'm not sure if that's even a thing. It just feels weird that it's just going to stop. And I keep thinking, as does everybody, that, well, there must be something else, some other memento people would want to have, but there's really no point to it. So I'm confused about that right now, like what to offer. There was, for a while, it was box sets and big elaborate things, and I don't really like those. I don't have any interest in having that kind of stuff. So I don't know what's going to come next, and that's, you know, an issue, but on the whole, it's been fantastic that more people are going digital.
What's going to come next for the type of physical memento or souvenir that people can have? I mean, action figures or whatever?
Yeah, action figures would be great. I mean, the big issue is that most people don't want, you know, you don't want little pieces of junk cluttering around your house just because you liked an album once. There's the justifications of it that, you know, you don't have the relationship anymore that you had with like an LP and things like that. And that's true. There's like an emotional connection, but there's also, those were rare records, you know, like the number of albums that I had like that kind of close relationship with, you know, what, like 20, 30, maybe 40. And these days your average person consume, especially, you know, under 30, consumes a lot more music than that. And are they going to have a little, you know, wicker box in their house for every single album that they have? What is the point of doing that whole thing?
You still structure your releases around albums, though, as if there was a physical CD. I mean, you mm-hmm. release songs pretty much constantly and yeah. at various stages of development.
Yeah.
But you think of them as this will be track number 4 on my new album, even though the mm-hmm. physical object isn't there anymore, and then the album is simply the order of the links that you post on your site.
Right, yeah.
Do you think that's going
to... Yeah, I think that's on the way out, or at least it's going to be optional. Right now, the main reason... Because I thought about that when I finished my last record and when I started working on this new one, I thought, well, why bother? Why should I wait? Why not just do like one good song, do it, put it out, try to make money off of it? But the reality, or at least my thinking, was that people aren't, you know, it's not enough. It's not enough to get attention. The main reason why you do the whole album cycle, you know, it's the same reason why people, you know, why the major labels do all their marketing blitzes and things like that. You want to build up to your album release so you can get the most number of people paying attention and then, you know, and have a product there that's ready for people. I think it's just a pattern that I feel like people are used to right now. And I guess thinking about it right now as I ramble on, that if I go, I have a new song, that doesn't really get linked around.
Water?
As soon as you finish this answer.
Okay. Yeah. That doesn't... saying that I have a new song out doesn't garner that much attention. My fans come in who are interested, but most people are waiting for a full... They're waiting for 30 minutes or more of music, it seems like. I don't think they care too much about what form that takes, if it's a full album, if it's whatever. But for it to be worth their time to get invested in these new songs, I have to like give them a lump of them at once.
So is this, do you think, just a hangover from being trained by physical CDs and albums, LPs before that? Or is there something about the art form that says, you know, it's humans like to hear 8, 10, 12, whatever number of songs as a whole and discover the connections among them? Or put this differently, when you are writing an album, which may never actually be released as a physical album,
mm-hmm.
You do seem to be thinking about the relationships among the pieces and viewing mm-hmm. it as a whole. So I guess I'm asking the extent to which that's an artistic decision and the extent to which it's just sort of training from a previous medium.
It's both. I think that marketing-wise, I think of it as that it's what people are used to. It's a trained thing. People are used to albums. It's lessening, I think, and I think it's going to split even more. But for me, I was a fan of the album, or I am a fan of albums. I like the idea of an integrated, group of songs that kind of relate to each other. I find those were like the most rewarding albums that I listened to when I was a teenager and still now. So I like that, but I don't think there's anything necessarily, I don't know, I'm rethinking it as I speak here. Like, well, I don't know. It's like short stories versus novels, I suppose. You can enjoy both, but they're differently, you're going to get different things out of them. It's a medium question, I suppose, more than a, like, what medium you're going to use to work on your craft.
You jokingly earlier said that it was better before the field got crowded with competitors.
Yes, I hate those guys.
Yes, because, you know, everybody knows music is a zero-sum game.
And
overall, as the sort of ecology changes, more people come in, as users get more used to it, new tools arise and the like. Is this a better time for an internet museum? Maybe we'll say, is this a better time for an internet musician?
Yeah.
Or the same or worse?
I think it's definitely a better time. There's all sorts of peaks within the better time, of course. I think the best time for me was probably, well, it's right now, it's great for me, but there was a little bubble or a little gold rush there before everybody had gotten wise to the internet, that you could kind of get in and get attention really quickly, with not a ton of work. And now it's definitely more difficult.
Because you were one of the pioneers and people were curious about it.
Well, you know, when I started saying, you know, I have a free MP3, would you? And people would be like, oh my God, it's a free MP3. Let's go get it. And they'd all check it out because it was free. And now it's, you know, that's ridiculous. I just made fun of on my, Twitter about, I got a press release from somebody that said, you know, free new music alert. It was all in caps. I was like, oh my God, somebody's put out new music and it's free. That's amazing. So there's pros and cons. Right now, your resources and the drawback back then was that you could reach whoever was hanging around on the internet and able to listen to MP3s and or had an iPod or even before that, it was difficult. So the audience has increased amazingly. So that part is certainly much, much better. And there's a direct path now with iTunes and Amazon and everything to actually make money off of your recordings. So I'd go with better.
So you do this weird thing. I think it's becoming less weird over time, but this weird thing of letting people download your music for free, or they can pay.
Yeah.
And then pay at a variety of sites, including your own.
Mm-hmm.
Within the overall environment, the overall ecology, is that becoming more standard? Is it becoming weirder or less weird? How's it working out?
It's working out good. It's kind of silly offering the pay what you want, because it seems like the majority of people just pay the suggested price. There's just a default. I don't say at any point you have to pay, or I recommend that you pay this amount, but the little field when you type in your dollar amount is pre-filled to like $10 for the album, and like $1 for the individual songs, and most people just keep it the 10 and call it a day.
You should change it to a million.
I haven't actually experimented with that. See, that's, you're hired. So it's kind of, I wrote my own digital download store and stuff for that. And it's kind of funny because, I remember how hard it was to write the variable pricing stuff, and it's not really used, but I like it. There's a few things that are more expensive for me, like, shipping is a bit more expensive than you would get from, say, Amazon or something. And there are people who do adjust the price, like they go, oh my goodness, you know, $5 to ship to Australia or something. I'll just knock that down to $8 for the album so that I'm paying an even. And there are people that do that, and so I'm happy to let them do that. It seems like that sort of pay what you want pricing is kind of gone away. It's a thing you can offer, but you're not going to get any extra attention or love from it. These days, it's kind of all about the Kickstarter and things like that. And even if it's still kind of a novelty, actually, for a band to be able to even offer their own songs for sale on their own website. So perhaps we just haven't even gotten to that.
Why don't you copyright your stuff? Aren't you worried that it'll get used in a commercial and where you could have been compensated highly and it's not?
Not really. No. Like, when I started off, it seemed... Copyright stuff. Well, the simple answer is it was just desperation in the beginning. I just wanted people to be able to copy my stuff, and I wanted it to be distributed widely.
Why?
Well, because that's basically the entire point to me of bothering to finish and put music out. Certainly I do a lot of it, like the first part, for myself. That's rewarding. The whole polishing it up and putting it out and dealing with all that sort of stuff, that's actually not that great. I mean, it's a lot of work. I like the positive reactions. And certainly the money stuff is great. But if all that were out of the equation, I would just kind of, half finished songs and throw them in a box. But, so more people that pay attention to my stuff, the better it is for me. I thought that likely things would start to happen. I wasn't sure what was going to happen with all the music and stuff. And right now I really like that it takes on a life of its own. When I put something out, it's like, you know, a day or something, and there's stuff up on YouTube, there's stuff up other places.
What sort of stuff goes up?
There's like kids who do guitar tablature of my song demos when I put them out, which is wild because I don't, you know, they can play guitar better than me. And so that's pretty interesting. And then I think it just works to my advantage since I don't have a ton of like promo budget or anything like that. And especially before I didn't have any, it was kind of using everybody else's activity, all their projects and things, and they'd be doing their own stuff. They'd be doing their own remixes or their own videos or something. And my stuff would get thrown in there because I wasn't all tight with permission or anything. And then they go off and show it to like 50 people, and that gets my song heard by those 50 people. So it seemed to work out pretty good.
Has there been a case where somebody made use of your song in a way that made you think, you know, I really wish they had asked, or I wish I had gotten a cut of that, or?
No, not that I know of. I've heard some rumors that there's some, I think the only time that I vaguely think about it, and it's the same with seemingly a lot of musicians, is when it starts getting used like politically or something. Apparently there's like European political ads with some of my stuff in it. And I don't know what party, I don't know anything about it, but I just remember thinking, you know, oh, this is how Bruce Springsteen felt. Like, you know, what if my song is advertising Hitler right now? I don't know. That's a weird one, because I always thought the nightmare scenario that everybody brought up was like, oh, what happens if Nike takes your song and makes, you know, billions and billions of dollars off it? And my response was always like, I'm pretty sure I can find a way to make some money from, like, well, then I'm touring as the Nike guy, or my song's a hit, and, you know, whatever. I figured it would be okay. And just kind of trusted that stuff. But on things that are more sort of ideological, it's kind of interesting, because you see a lot of artists who are pretty laid back, and then they suddenly get freaked out as soon as, you know, the Republicans use their song. And like, oh, I thought you were all about freedom. And then, no, not when it's a bad politician I hate. So I've vaguely thought about it, but I haven't done any investigating into it. I'm pretty lazy about it, really.
You're a pretty shy performer. your live public concerts are
mm-hmm.
you know, pretty rare, and you don't in your blog you seem to be forcing yourself to do it. That seems to be your first instinct.
Right, yeah.
I'm wondering whether the internet has enabled you to be more reclusive than you would have been if there weren't one.
That's probably a good general analysis of me. Just overall, that has outside of music. Probably, but it's also, I don't know, maybe I just would have quit. If I hadn't have been able to, you know, shyly go off and work on my stuff and put it out there. I don't know. I know the usual band stuff was never really my bag. It just, even when I was like 16 and doing, you know, cover stuff and everything, I just found it, yeah, I just was a different kind of weird dude.
So one result of this is probably that when people do come to one of your concerts, they all know about you in some depth from the web. Right? So tell me if I'm wrong, but I'm assuming they didn't hear a song somewhere and just say, yeah, I want to go hear this guy. They've been to your site, they've poked around, they may have read your blog.
It's surprising, but it's largely... Usually at any show, and I mean, I've really only started playing probably decently attended shows in the past like year and a half, 2 years. And now when I talk to people, most people haven't actually really been to my website. And that's really unusual because I'm basically an internet musician. The ways that people find out about my stuff are really varied. On the last show I did, there was some computer science guys who totally knew my website, knew me through apparently the sounds I did for the open source instant messenger Pigeon. It's like
you say more.
You know. Instant, you know, multi-protocol IM stuff, so you can do your AIM and your Google Talk and all that sort of stuff. Back in like 2003 or 2004, they contacted me and I did the default, you know, little Bing sounds and things like that for it.
You're a guy.
Yeah, it was actually called GAIM back then, GAIM.
I used to use it. I had no ideas.
Yeah.
This is like meeting the you got mail.
Yeah, exactly.
It's impressive.
So like those guys knew my history.
So people who come to your concert because they heard you do the pigeon alert sounds.
Yeah.
That is maybe the geekiest explanation for attending a concert I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's pretty much that's up there. I'm trying to think of a better one. There have been some good ones, but I'm blanking right now. So I had those guys, and they were great. And then I had another, some other people who had, my stuff's in a lot of like sports videos, like kayak, and what's this other thing? That's right, kiteboarding. Apparently I'm very popular with the kiteboarders.
And you, of course, are a champion
yes,
kiteboarder.
Yes.
So that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. And then there was a whole bunch of tattoo artists and a bunch, you know, it was just that's actually been really thrilling and interesting to see like the weird diversity of how the music gets around to people. And that going back to the other question about letting people do whatever with my stuff, that feels like that really paid off, because I don't know how I would have gotten all those different people to listen to my stuff. Like, I have no clue how I would have done that.
How you could target the tattoo artist
while
also the kiteboarder and the
kayakers.
That's
a lot of, yeah.
If you could change something or everything about the way the internet system works now,
mm-hmm.
what would you do?
The one thing that I keep preaching about is I wish there was more of a service industry for musicians. So instead of record labels, like you know, you go, if I want somebody to paint my house, I don't have to go get into like a 5-year deal with them. Well, we're going to sign you up for your next 5 houses and we're going to paint them all. And once you pay off the,
of course, equipment costs.
Yes. Once you recoup, you'll begin to see some sort of, and the thinking is basically still like that. You know, I talk to a few labels here and there, and it is basically, let's just create this big dumb thing. And I'm like, okay, well, can I just hire like a booking person? Can I just, instead of joining an agency, can I literally just, pay you out of my pocket or whatever, cut you a percent or whatever. And simpler things like promo, and stuff like that, like it gets difficult at, and not that I'm complaining at all, but it's a significant amount of time whenever I have like a new song or I have a new release or something, to go around and do all the various updating and the hassling of everybody. And I don't even do a very good job at it. Like I update my Facebook, my Twitter, my blog. When I've got a show, I feel really, really like I have to get the word out, because if I go do the show and nobody's there, I know I'm going to be really depressed. But I could use help on those things. But basically, I go to like a record company, or they talk to me, and they, okay, well, we're going to put you on the road. And I go, whoa, not interested. I don't, And they're like, you're going to slog it out while we make, 10, 15% off of each date. I'm like, yeah, I'd rather play a few shows and try to make as much money as we can, and you get some, or I pay you up front or whatever. However the deal works out. But I find there's not really a lot of that. And the people that are doing it are kind of shady looking. There's like still a lot of radio promo, like give us $5,000 and we'll make sure radio gets your CD. And like, oh, that's great. Probably goes right in the garbage.
That's awfully cynical.
Yeah, it is.
Well, so given the number of, the increase in the population of internet musicians, maybe somebody will figure out this is a viable set of services to offer.
That's the thing. When it was just a handful of us, I understood, like, we're anomalies. But now it's everybody that is doing this now. And if they're not already, they want to. But it's definitely difficult. You need help. You need to hire some people. But everybody's still in the industry seems to be still hoping they can get another sweet, middleman opportunity going, or be able to keep their, companies with thousands of employees afloat off of, a handful of artists. And I don't think it's not even for me to say. I don't know anything about the inside of that system, but all I know is myself, all my friends, everybody that I know that does music has, they're making money now. And if there's things they need, I was like at a business thing, and I proposed a radical idea for a business, music business model of find out problems that artists have and solve them, but charge them for it. And it didn't go over well. Nobody found it.
You needed to use the phrase internet secret sauce.
Oh, yes.
And that's where you went wrong.
Okay. I thought you were going to
say, if you'd only said, and then you apply the internet secret sauce, you'd be a millionaire.
I thought you were going to say synergize.
That's what secret sauce does.
Oh, yeah.
Main it's synergy. Yeah. Is synergy. So you're now off to the Berklee conference on the future of music.
Right, yes.
And you're going to be on a panel mm-hmm. with Berkman's founder, Charlie Nesson.
Mm-hmm.
So first, Can you tell us a little bit about your understanding of the panel? And then I also want to point out that I understand that panel will also be recorded and available on the net and is likely to be very, very interesting.
Yes, I'm going to try and keep my streak going and swear in every panel that I'm on.
Well, we've missed this one.
Well, it's not technically a panel. I like to... There's not enough of a crowd here for me to swear and not feel awkward.
Okay, well...
Yeah.
It's okay. I don't want to push into swearing. Now, it would just be cheap
now,
sensational.
You just made it awkward.
Damn it. Does that count?
I don't know. The panel, as far as I know, it was pitched to me as that they're going to be talking about potential new business models for musicians, and they're going to have representatives. So they'll have like a lawyer on the panel, an entrepreneur on the panel, DJ, and an artist, and the artist is me. So, and it's supposed to be mostly geared towards artists that that have full control of their music or aren't already in a record label deal. So I understand. I saw some stuff online about the conference so far, and people were sort of, what was it? I think one of the people that's going to be on the panel said something like, you know, all these rich artists telling new artists how to make money in music is like lottery winners. Yeah, I told that very poorly.
Your point was succinct.
Yes. But so as far as I know, I'm going to basically sit there and then I'm going to be really cynical during the entire thing and tell everyone that I disagree.
And curse at least once.
At least once, probably more times.
Looking forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. And you know,
I'm
a huge fan of your music and how you do it. So thanks.
Thank you so much.